Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. If you've been listening to the podcast recently, thank you. And also, I'm curious what your thoughts are about all this discussion about the interspecies factors that we share with other mammals that Panksepp has identified, the 7 affective systems of primary emotion experience. And maybe you're wondering how this relates to the practice of psychology, or if it even does, and how to start translating between those primary and secondary and tertiary processes that Panksepp identified. Well, today's episode is going to explore exactly that after adding a little bit more information about how I conceptualize these things in session. And then I'll add in a research article that ties together some of those ideas, plus some of the other ones we've talked about on the podcast in terms of heart rate variability and personality assessments, and try to bring some of these concepts all together so that you can have some confidence that they in fact do relate, even though each episode kind of involves a lot of translation from term to term to term. And there is a lot of connection here that I find is important for us as we are practicing. So thank you, and let's get started. Recently, I heard this idea from Mark Solms. He's a South African psychoanalyst and neuropsychologist. And he was talking about his experience with Jaak Panksepp and how he's taken that work and applied it to psychology in his own way. And he was on a podcast describing what consciousness is. And he said a lot of things on this podcast, but one of the themes he centered on that I've had a hard time walking away from since I heard it is this idea that the difference between living and non-living things is that living things have to stay within ranges in order to stay alive. Like for humans, we have to stay within a temperature range. We have to stay within a range of sleep, food, water, and that the affects or feelings we have at that most basic level are kind of to alert us when we're edging toward the outsides of those ranges. And then that motivates our behavior in that seeking system that Panksepp described, as I understand it. And when we feel like we've obtained the food or the water or gotten our temperature in a range that feels comfortable, then that's the pleasing affects or feelings. And it's just such an interesting concept. I'll put the podcast he was on in the show notes for your reference. But it's such a basic idea. Like, really, is that all we're doing? Is just staying within a range of all these different needs that we have? So I've been thinking a lot about it since I heard it. And despite my kind of disappointment with the basic structure of his assertion, I have to agree on some accounts that that is one way to frame things. You know, as mental health therapists, I can see the premise there that when I'm working, I'm constantly trying to support someone in staying inside of their comfortable ranges, whatever they may be in, whatever environment or context they find themselves in at that moment. And I found a study that actually talks directly to this. It's entitled Conceptualizing Personality as Individualized Allostasis, Exploring a Balanced Measure of Personality for Psychotherapy and Psychophysiology Integration. Authors are Stefan and Olson. If, like me, you had to look up the word allostasis, I'll give you the definition, and then we'll talk about how this article relates to the practice of psychology. The authors quote, "Whereas homeostasis involves regulation of specific bodily functions, such as temperature, allostasis focuses on the interdependence of all physiological systems to adapt to changing environmental needs. In this perspective, personality represents the brain's approach to attain allostasis, with development over time contributing to our unique individualized ways of balancing needs or individualized allostasis." So as I understand it, then it's kind of the, you know, the person that we meet in front of us and we are supporting, we can conceptualize allostasis as their way of their own personality and unique traits combined with the history that they've had in the learning or environment they've either currently in or have been in the past. A combination of all those things is kind of their medium or their version, I think, of what Solms is talking about, is a little bit of an individualized experience of those ranges that this person finds himself most comfortable in. I like this premise a lot because it makes room for the fact that there are unique dispositions and experiences such that now the ranges or the normal experiences are more individualized and unique. Not sure if I just need to feel unique or if it just feels more real, maybe a bit of both. But one reason I want to present this today is they take a few different personality assessments and look at them in relationship to heart rate variability. For reference, I've discussed heart rate variability previously on the podcast, but it's considered a marker for our body's ability to regulate itself. From another article in the same journal that I will also list in the show notes, they explain HRV can also be viewed as a measure of the autonomic nervous system's ability to modulate itself to meet environmental demands. It's indicative of parasympathetic functioning and helps the body achieve optimal levels of activation and return to homeostasis. So the original study I was mentioning with Stefan and Olson is looking at heart rate variability in reference to these other personality assessments to try to determine and make their case that instead of how psychology typically looks at personality, they're reminding us that most scales have like a zero to whatever the outer range limit would be on the scale. And it's, you know, it's just kind of a unipolar or in one direction amount. And what they are suggesting is that a better indication might be a scale that runs both positive and negative, such that it gives a wider variety of scores, both above zero and below zero in this example. And would allow for these allostasis views on the unique patient's personality a lot better. And I really like this idea because they're bringing in the idea that moderate responding, in other words, sort of being in the middle of a particular range, whatever that range may be, tends to lead to the best outcomes in nearly everything. You know, I know a lot of times culturally we're taught to seek the highest levels of achievement and other things, but I think as we mature into adults, we realize that living at the extremes for a long amount of time eventually, you know, sort of needs to balance out. And that's what these authors are suggesting, that to provide more views into that, personality assessment should have more of a ability to look at moderate functioning. And from a mathematical perspective, it's a lot easier to do that if the ranges go above and below zero. So what they find is that a scale that they're looking at, the assessment of schema adaptability profile, has some promise in this regard. But the main thing that they conclude is this idea that much like heart rate variability needs to be able to rev up our systems when we are in a stressful situation or relax our systems when we're in a calming situation. And the ability to do that is reflective of an overall health indicator. These authors are suggesting that personality scales should be improved such that we can then start to learn how our patients can do that from a personality perspective and be flexible and adaptable to different environments and different conditions. And I just think this is a fascinating concept that we need to really consider. It's not, you know, a static kind of behavior or performance or whatever. You know, people are probably getting ready to go back to school at this time. And so, you know, they might be thinking about academic achievements and other things. And it's not this sort of one indication of overall health, but instead the ability to be flexible and adaptive in all of the different environments one finds oneself. And I appreciate how these authors are asserting the need for psychology to catch up to this growing awareness of how health and optimal functioning really look in the field of psychology. And one other voice that I would like to bring into this discussion is Dr. Temple Grandin. If you're not familiar, I hope you will become familiar. She's brilliant and she's done a lot to help give voice to the experience of animals. She is on the autistic spectrum and has written many books about how she feels like her experience is very similar to that, or has a lot of similarities to that of the animals. And so she can speak both what it's like to live with the features of autism and also give voice to how animals may experience things as well. So she has an article. It's entitled My Reflections on Understanding Animal Emotions for Improving the Life of Animals in Zoos. It's from the Journal of Applied Welfare Science, done in August of 2018. And she just has this really neat reflection from the abstract. It suggests that in both people and animals, genetics has an influence on both fearfulness and novelty seeking. Visualizing the seven core emotional systems as separate volume controls on a music mixing board may help zoo professionals determine the motivation of both normal and abnormal behavior. It also may help them to design more effective environmental enrichments. So she's taking Panksepp's idea here of the seven core emotional or affective systems, and she says to separate them as volume controls on a music mixing board. And so she's also leaning in this direction that there's sort of an optimal balance for each individual that will be the best possible scenario in the best possible environment. And so switching now to thinking about what we do with this in session as mental health therapists. For me, I try to listen, especially at this time of the year. I'm very attuned to hearing about what it's like. This is a time of transition. It's a transition in the world. We're coming up, not to bring it too fast, but we are going into fall in the next couple of months. And it's interesting to me every year how so much, even if you're not tied to an academic environment, a lot of the world runs on an academic calendar, it seems. And I think that's because the academic calendar actually ties to nature's calendar, and it's a time of transition. And so transitions usually heighten the stress for everybody. So what I listen for and watch for are those stress signals. You know, if someone's trying to tell me that the school is great and everything is awesome, then I'm thinking that their voice tone and prosody just accelerated and heightened. And so I want to think about, they maybe want things to be great, but maybe in a few weeks we'll have a discussion about some not great things that are part of the transition of returning to school in this example. Or it's also just a busy time, it seems. I think the heat of summer slows everything down, and now the coolness of fall seems to speed things back up. So I really attune myself to what that's like for people. Some people really enjoy the picking up of the pace and kind of thrive on a quicker lifestyle. Others may not. And so much like this idea of allostasis, I try to watch all of the things of the nonverbals I've been discussing in previous episodes to determine the person's actual experience of that. And then I listen to the words they're telling me, and sometimes they're aspirational, as in they want to adjust to these new things and they eventually will. But I am wondering what each person's individual unique experience of all these factors is optimal, and trying to start by normalizing the fact that each person has a unique experience of these moments of transition, and that it's, you know, it's okay. In fact, in what we've talked about today, actually encouraged and highly normal across humans and all animals, that these are unique combinations that make it best or most suitable or most enjoyable for each person. So that's where I start, is I try to look and listen for the stress displays on the face, you know, when the whites of the eyes are showing more, the upper eyebrow area is lifted, speed of the speech changes. I'm looking for those as markers of stress or intensity, and seeing how the person responds such that we can find those spots of allostasis that feel most comfortable for them. And a lot of times that starts with normalizing the fact that their version of that is unique to them, and that is just not even just okay, but that is what we're hoping for, is they'll find their own rhythm and way of responding that is just right for them. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.